draw be? I think the Globe summed it up best one time when they said when a lot of big, spectacular Christmas shows come on like Red Bull, a Christmas Celtic sojourn is more like a warm cup of cocoa. And during these stressful times, I took that as a real compliment.
We now return to A Christmas Celtic Sojourn, live from the Cutler Majestic Theatre at Emerson College in Boston, from PRI, Public Radio International.
A Christmas Celtic Sojourn is coming to you direct from the Cutler Majestic Theatre at Emerson College, bringing innovation to communication and the arts. It's a production of WGBH Boston, also home to our website, christmasceltic.org. I'm Brian O'Donovan. Thanks for joining us, and happy holidays.
Thank you.
This is Winifred Horan. That's a beautiful tune Winifred calls A Daisy in December. And guess what else? She wrote that beautiful tune. Great to have you with us on our Christmas Celtic Sojourn live from Boston over PRI here on this chilly Boston December before Christmas. What do you say we get Aileith McCormack back out here for a couple of songs?
Hello again. My name is Aileith McCormack, and I am a wassailer. And my mother and father were wassailers before me. And what I'm heard of this evening, you are all wassailers too. Do you know what I'm talking about? Oh, you do. What's a wassailer? A wassailer is somebody who goes round door to door singing carols and who partakes in a little drink in the process. So it's carol singing with a little bit of socialising thrown in. And we're going to do a song about that now. I'm going to teach you the chorus so you can all join in. Yeah? Okay? You repeat after me, and I've heard you, so I'm hoping for good things. Love and joy come to you.
Love and joy come to you.
Beautiful. And to you, your wassail too.
And to you, your wassail too.
God bless you and send you a happy new year. God bless you and send you a happy new year. God send you a happy new year. In the lead in the bookies. Okay, we're going to have Navin to come and join us on this one as well. about carol singing in Sandwick. It's the village that I'm from in Lewis. We used to go round the doors every Christmas and raise money for charity by carol singing. But one particular year, the village I come from is Sandwick, and one particular year, a rather enterprising group of children from the next village went round our village posing at us and kept the money. So the year after that, so that wouldn't happen again, my mother gave me a placard to carry which said that we were the Sandwick Hill kids, which is not cool when you're 10 years of age. But when we were looking for songs for this show, Brian, as I said before, asked me to bring some along, and I mentioned this one, which happens to be my favourite Christmas song, and it's also his. And it's written by a very prolific and wonderful songwriter that you will all know. It's from her iconic album, Blue, and this is Joni Mitchell's River.
It's a Christmas Celtic Sojourn coming to you from WGBH Boston and PRI, Public Radio International. Great to have you with us this evening. I'm Brian O'Donovan, and you're listening to a 10th anniversary broadcast of A Christmas Celtic Sojourn. It's a production of WGBH Boston, coming to you live from the Cutler Majestic Theatre at Emerson College via PRI, Public Radio International. We're also online at Christmas Celtic www.ctrl.org, where you can listen to this program again on demand and see pictures and a playlist from this 10th anniversary program. Well, this next song takes us to Butte, Montana, which is an unusual place, you might say, for a Christmas Celtic sojourn. But there's a backstory. Butte, Montana was a thriving Irish community back in the late 19th century and early part of the 20th century. For one reason, it was a boomtown based on mining and largely copper mining. Thousands and thousands of young Irish people flocked there for the chance of a new life. And you can imagine how rough and tumble those boomtowns were in those days and how lonely those new immigrants were as they tried to make a life for themselves in the new land, a life very different from what was happening back in a very, very poor and challenged Ireland indeed. Well, Seamus Egan, a number of years ago, came across a story in his own family that he decided to pursue more heavily and got into a story of absolute intrigue. Seamus Egan, tell us about the story of Michael Conway.
Well, Butte had always sort of held a bit of an exotic place in the family history. And because there was the story of Michael Conway, my great-great-uncle, who left County Mayo and came here to the States. He landed in Philadelphia first, and then he made his way to Butte, Montana, like so many other people from Ireland and from all over the world, to, you know, in the hopes of making a better life. And it was a great place for the Irish at the time.
But it was a rough and tumble place as well, even though a lot of people were actually writing home saying that there was money to be made. And I understand that's what happened with Michael.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was at a time in American history when the Irish weren't all that welcomed. And a lot of jobs would have a notice attached to them saying, "No Irish need apply." But that was certainly not the case in Butte. They were welcomed, and if you were Irish, you pretty much would get a job working in the mine. And it was so good, in fact, for the Irish, this one fellow wrote back home to his brother, who was still back in Ireland, and, you know, tell him how great it was. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Come directly to Butte. Don't even stop in America."
And a lot of them did, including this Michael Conway, who was no stranger to being able to settle a brawl in a particular way, right?
Well, the story in our family, there's several versions of it, but apparently he was a bit of a bare-knuckles fighter. And certainly Butte was a place where you could go and hit people. So,
for sport and for money.
For all kinds of reasons.
And yes. This landed him in the ultimate trouble as well, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, as the story goes, a fight was fixed and he was supposed to go down. And he stayed up. But
that's
then he
idea.
Went down.
Permanently.
Yes, he did.
True story, and a very tragic one, and of course reflective of a lot of stories. But Seamus and Mick McCauley here on guitar, who's going to join him in singing this song, they wrote a song especially for this time of year, knowing that they were coming back to a Christmas Celtic sojourn. It's related to the project. The project is called Shamrock City, a fascinating project indeed, that's reflective of a lot of the American experience, quite frankly. But this song, taking the notion that somebody who has to come under adverse circumstances to America might have a snippet of a memory from home, a Christmas memory perhaps, when times were much happier. "Oh, to be a child on Christmas Day," goes a line in the song. Take a listen closely to the words. Mick McCauley and Sullis singing the Butte Christmas song.
Dawns upon the weary town, and tired men talk of Christmas Bay, as the ever-spinning mind winds slowly down. It only ever happens for one day. Snowflakes fall upon a deafened ground, silence, it spreads a steering way, and in my head faint echoes of sweet Gloria, and I cry for home on Christmas Day. To stalk of small fortunes that beckon me, That's how I came to work on foreign soil. Maybe it's no wise man who dreams of catching stars, for still I walk a poor man's way. And the faithful say a newborn king as round the Queen Celestia as I go. Oh, whiskey, save my spirit, say no, you steal my head, fly me home for Christmas Day. Hark, do I hear my little angels sing as they lay a clay-born manger on the round our firelight kitchen, they run stories round to light up a face on Christmas Day. The candlelight fills the window pane to help all weary folk to find their way. Round our firelight kitchen rings sweet glow. It's pure paradise on Christmas Day. Just talk of false fortunes that beckon me. That's why I left to work on foreign soil. Surely it's no wise man who dreams of catching stars, for still I walk a poor man's way. And I hear them say a newborn king, I'd fall down on bended knees if I could stay. Oh, I'd trade my place in heaven for true glory, just to be a child on Christmas Day. Down on bended knees if I could stay. Oh, I'd trade my place in heaven for true glory, just to be a child on Christmas Day. Oh, to be a child on Christmas Day. And now heaven smiles on Christmas.
The Bute Christmas Song. What a beautiful song from the pen of Mick McCauley and Seamus Egan and Solace. You're listening to A Christmas Celtic Sojourn, a special live edition from the Cutler Majestic Theatre here at Emerson College, right in the heart of downtown Boston. A Christmas Celtic Sojourn comes from A Celtic Sojourn, a weekly programme that's broadcast on WGBH. Great to have you with us on our radio audience out there over PRI and right here in the theatre itself. Is this a wonderful gathering for Christmas, ladies and gentlemen? So lots of different pieces to the Shamrock City project, including exploring the wonderful kinship, the cousin, first cousin relationship between Irish traditional music and American Appalachian music. Right, Seamus?
Like some of the well, we're going to play next, certainly, a couple of tunes that fit in musically and sort of historically, I suppose.
And they are. A lot of that Appalachian-style fiddling, the Appalachian-style clogging, all came from Scotland and Ireland. Scots-Irish coming over here to New England, them emigrating into the Appalachian Hills. And it sounds, well, it sounds like I just referred to it, as kin, as cousins in traditional music. Solace. Wonderful music indeed. Well, we had such a great experience singing those Christmas songs in the first half. We think we'll do it again. Does that sound right to you? Yeah. Let's get Aelith already out here. We are going to invite Aelith, I think, some backup,
yes,
right?
We're going to have Navin out with us again. Here we are.
Again, a very familiar song. We expect you to sing it to the highest of heavens up there in the wonderful balconies of the Cutler Majestic Theatre. Let's hear it for yourselves up there. Lindsay O'Donovan will start us off.
Joyous strains prolong what the
song.
Come to Bethlehem.
Great gathering here at Christmas Celtic Sojourn right in downtown Boston for our radio audience. There were the Palatsky brothers, John and Nathan and Cara Butler, proving that you can sit down and dance. And if you are listening and you want to check out our website, christmasceltic.org, we'll be posting pictures very shortly of the Palatsky brothers and Cara Butler in that dance position on chairs. Christmas is a time of always for me. A time to revisit the old and the familiar. When I was growing up in Clonakilty and West Cork, I always felt secure and maybe even a little encouraged when the same decorations appeared on the tree each year, when the same lights were strung across the streets of the town, when the nativity scene appeared in the church. All the O'Donovans, 9 children, Aileen, Mildred, Michael, Carmen, James, Margaret, and Brian Raymond. And my parents, Jim and Joan, would follow a set pattern on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Rituals that were sacred even if they applied to fairly mundane things. Who always got to light the big candle on Christmas Eve, for example? Or who got the first cup of Van Houten's cocoa made by my godfather, Paddy McCarthy, who was a bachelor all his life and loved to visit after tea on Christmas Eve. And Christmas was just full of always. We always visited Santa Claus on the 8th of December, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. A baffling holiday to me when I was young, when I tried to get the details right. We would journey to Cork City and visit many stores, each with their unique Santas. Santi, we called them. Fake beards, but genuine smiles. Once I remember coming down a slide, a magical experience, into where Santa was, only to find him discussing the latest football results with my father. And other Santas, I remember, smelled amazingly like the inside of my grandmother's pub in Kinsale. Our Christmas tree was always bought from the Galvin family, who lived in Rathbarry on the edge of the big wood. And in the mid-60s, still a fairly poor time in Ireland, we always rented, for heaven's sake, a television for the week between Christmas and New Year's. The electrician who had to install the aerial on the chimney, remember aerials? Well, he always did so on Christmas Eve, arriving late, always after a few pints, and then in very, very dramatic fashion, shouted down from his precarious position on the windy heights of our roof, as he made his very scientific adjustments. How's the picture now? We always rose early on Christmas morning and went to first mass. We always sat in front of the manger scene, the creche, as we call it here. The cow, always with her sad eyes. The donkey with an eternally chipped ear. The baby Jesus, who always looked far too plump and happy to me. The shepherd with the lamb across his shoulders, and in the distance, the 3 wise men, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar, bringing with their exotic names incomprehensible gifts. Well, gold was fine, I suppose, but frankincense and myrrh? Imagine if you woke up on Christmas morning, my brother whispered in my ear one Sunday at Mass, and Santa had given you a box of frankincense. And of course, we were always together for Christmas. Always, my whole family. Aileen, Mildred, Michael, Carmel, Margaret, James, Anne, Brian, Raymond. Except for that time, my oldest sister, Aileen, who had gone to work in Dublin, called. And I remember so well that day. I remember where I was exactly in our house, hearing that she was not coming home for Christmas. And my precious Christmas always were gone forever. Christmas sparkles, though, in my childhood memory. One of the traditions in my own family to read Dylan Thomas's classic account of a child's Christmas in Wales, where he says in the opening lines, "One Christmas was so much like another that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12, or for 12 days and 12 nights when I was six." He goes on to write that his always were uncles and aunts gathered in his little house. There were always uncles at Christmas, the same uncles. And on Christmas morning, mistletoe hung from the gas brackets in all the front parlors. There were sherry and walnuts and bottled beer and crackers by the dessert spoons, and cats in their furabouts watched the fires and the high-heaped fire spat, all ready for the chestnuts and the mulling pokers. Some few large men sat in the front parlors without their collars, uncles almost certainly, trying out their new cigars, holding them out judiciously at arm's length, then returning them to their mouths, coughing, and holding them out again as though waiting for the explosion. And some few small aunts, not wanted in the kitchen, or anywhere else for that matter, sat on the very edge of their chairs, poised and brittle, afraid to break like faded cups and saucers. Reading passages like this from writers like Dylan Thomas and Patrick Kavanagh, year after year, Christmas after Christmas, I can almost recapture some of that time that was always for me. And this is a time of year, indeed, when we allow ourselves to be nostalgic, when a snippet of memory becomes a treasure and can transport us back decades in an instant. On Christmas nights long ago, my sister Anne and I would sneak away after Christmas dinner to the upstairs sitting room with its wonderful fireplace, lighting brightly on Christmas night, one of the few times during the year it was lit. We would turn off all the other lights but those on the Christmas tree. And there, in the warmth of a fireplace glow, we would always eat a whole layer of biscuits from a red tin, importantly branded USA. We would drink white fizzy lemonade, me and my sister Anne, always. Always on Christmas night there was music, Dylan Thomas writes. An uncle played the fiddle, a cousin sang Cherry Ripe, and another uncle sang Drake's Drum. It was very warm in the little house. Auntie Hannah, who had got onto the parsnip wine, sang a song about bleeding hearts and death, and then another in which she said her heart was like a bird's nest. And then everybody laughed. And then I went to bed. Looking through my bedroom window, out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising up from them, up the long, steady falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness. And then I slept.
It is the night of our dear Savior.
There are torturers in the world, there are also musicians. Though at this moment men are screaming in prisons, there are jazzmen raising storms of sensuous celebration and orchestras releasing glories of the spirit. Though the image of God is everywhere defiled, a man in West Clare is playing the concertina. The Sistine Choir is levitating under the dome of St. Peter's, and a drunk man on the road is singing for no reason. And that just about does it, ladies and gentlemen, for this special edition and this special broadcast of A Christmas Celtic Sojourn. Wonderful to be with you on radio stations throughout the country on PRI and here locally on WGBH 89.7. Natalie Haas is with us on cello. Back there in percussion, we have Ben Whitman and Chico Huff. The fiddle harp duo of Christopher Stout and Katrina Mackay. Egan and Solace. Navin from Madison, Wisconsin. My wife Lindsay O'Donovan on piano. The wonderful Aileth McCormack from Scotland. And we have Christmas Celtic Sojourn is coming to you direct from the Cutler Majestic Theatre at Emerson College, bringing innovation to communication and the arts. The stage production is led by artistic director Paula Plum and music director Seamus Egan. The broadcast team includes our mix engineer Antonio Oliart Rose, with additional engineering help from Tom Devlin, Miles Smith and Frank Cunningham, with production help from Andrew Hicks, Alan McClellan and Rani Schloss. Annie Schreffler takes care of the website christmasceltic.org. The managing director for WGBH Radio is Phil Rado. The executive producer for WGBH is Benjamin K. Rowe. I'm Brian O'Donovan. Thanks for joining us for this special live broadcast of A Christmas Celtic Sojourn, a production of WGBH Boston. Happy holidays.
PRI, Public Radio International.
A Christmas Celtic Sojourn.